So the scriptures this morning are straight out of the lectionary, Deuteronomy and Luke. We chose those two, and they spell out the question, which do you choose? And they give us a hint, title of the sermon. They're giving us a hint. Do not worship other gods, and do love your neighbor as yourself. That's it. That's a sermon for this morning. Thank you, Ms. Don. All right, I got a couple other pages here, about 12, so we'll just go on. The Israelites, you remember, they're journeying around, and they're going to be moving into the Promised Land. You've heard of the Promised Land. You've heard of their journey out of Egypt, and they're traveling 40 years in the wilderness, and they're going to come into the land that God has given them, the Promised Land, full of milk and honey. And it's the land of Canaan. It isn't empty. The Canaanites live there. And in the land of milk and honey, the Promised Land, they have a society. The Canaanites have their gods. We've heard some of their names. We hear them in the Old Testament in passing. There's Baal. There's Asherah. There's a bunch of them. And it's kind of fun because they have an entire industry around artisans who make icons, idols. So you can have an artist make a little Baal god, and you can carry God around in your pocket there. Wouldn't that be handy? Downside of that, and it's pointed out in some of the scriptures, is that clay god is, if it falls wrong and lands on a rock, it breaks. That's not a very robust god. And God, our God, Yahweh, the God of the Israelites, says, these little gods bring death, not life. This is, and you're going to be forced to choose when you go into the land and intermix with the Canaanites. You're going to join them in worshiping their gods with a little g. Are you going to be seduced away to their temples and statues and icons and their worship patterns? So you have to choose. And it is about life and death, you see, because life and death as in the passing of this mortal existence is not necessarily bad. We have life and death and life again. And it's a glorious, wonderful thing. The Reverend Dr. Walter Brueggemann, anybody ever heard of him? He's a scholar, biblical scholar. You might not have. He just died last month, June. He passed. He was 92 years old. He was old and full of years, and he sleeps with his fathers. Isn't that a lovely way of recognizing that this mortal existence comes to an end? And then we become part of another existence, which we can't see yet until we pass there. But life and death and life again is a cycle and is a routine. And that's part of what God is talking about when he says, if you worship other gods, you'll die. But that's not the entirety of that. You see, because this other worshiping of other idols is also about the idols and the gods of societies, the things that people are tempted to prioritize. Wealth, power, prestige, vanity. Those things might tend to be the most important things. I remember being in high school and knowing that when I get to the age that I am right now, what kind of house I would have and what kind of car I would be driving, a Porsche. And what I'd have as a career and everything, and I had it all figured out and envisioned. But those are things. Those are idols and things that can distract us away from what we should be idolizing. And indeed, those things can be soul-crushing. I remember in high school, I was the photographer for the school, And one of the things that I needed, I had a nice camera, but I couldn't get pictures from far away. I needed a telephoto lens. And I remember thinking, if I only had this telephoto lens, my life would be ideal. It would be just ideal, just wonderful beyond belief. So I talked to my folks, and it took some talking. My dad was frugal from the word F. Not a bad thing. He grew up in that Depression era when you didn't buy things if you didn't need, and you never threw anything away. But anyway, they finally agreed, and they bought me that lens, and you know, I used it for about 2-3 months, and then I used it about probably another 20 times over the rest of my life. And it has not brought me that idyllic life that I kind of envisioned. It's nice. I still have it. It's in a box in my cupboard, covered with dust. But those are things. You see my point. You understand my where I'm going. So Jesus tells this parable about the Good Samaritan. Keep in mind, good and Samaritan never went together in the Old Testament and in Jesus' time. Samaritans were those outsiders you did not associate with, you didn't have anything to do with, you disliked, and that you hated them as a country. Samaritans were just bad. You didn't even walk through their countryside. And yet Jesus did several times. Let's not go there. So here comes this parable, and you heard Sydney read it to you. The man falls among thieves and robbers. We don't know anything about him. But they steal everything, including his clothes, leave him naked, unconscious in the ditch. Priest and the Levite both came by, and they both go around him. Isn't that awful? Oh, what a horrible, nasty thing. No, they were obeying the Levitical laws. The Levitical laws said a priest shall not approach a naked body. A priest or a Levitical leader should not touch a dead body. So the potential for this still body in the ditch to be dead meant that the priest had to avoid it to do the right thing under the law. So they're obeying their legal dictates, their laws, the way that they should be properly. And Jesus lifts that up, and they go around the body. But along comes this Samaritan. And he stops and takes care of the body, takes care of the person, takes care of him, lifts him up. It's an amazing thing. And so Jesus is telling this parable. Keep in mind, it's a parable. We have no sign that it ever occurred. It occurs only in Luke. The account only occurs in Luke. It's a teaching story. And it might have been one that Matthew and Mark and John, they didn't include it in their Gospels because it just was too hard to hear, or they didn't focus on it, and who knows? But Luke tells us about this, and it's an important one for learning something. The Samaritan wastes his resources, wastes his time, risks getting in trouble because he's a Samaritan. And he does all those things for this other person. Now, there are fables. Anybody ever heard a fable? Come on, it's not a trick question. You've heard fables, okay. There's one, and I did not bother to look it up, so we're going to do this from memory. There was one about a lion that gets caught in a net. Remember this fable? Help me with this. It's caught in this net, and it's trapped, a hunter's net or something. And a mouse comes over, and the mouse chews through the webbing. Do you remember? Am I getting it right? Are we doing? If not, we're going to rewrite the fable right here and now. So the mouse chews through until the lion is freed. And this big lion, and here's a mouse, which would make a nice snack for a lion, you gotta admit. But now the lion remembers the mouse, and later the mouse is in trouble and I don't remember how, and the lion saves it. Do I have the fable pretty well close to? So the mouse does something nice for the lion, and in return, the lion does something nice for the mouse. Quid pro quo, that's called. Tit for tat. I will do something for you if you will do something for me. This is not the Good Samaritan. The Good Samaritan is not receiving anything back for giving of himself and his resource and everything about it to help this stranger. If he costs you any extra money, he tells the innkeeper, I'll pay that when I come back. Take care of him. Giving of himself, doesn't know him, and may not ever meet him again, may not even get a thanks. Which of these, Jesus asks the man, which of these do you think, the priest or the Levite or the Good Samaritan, which of these did the right thing? And of course, the right answer is the one who showed mercy. The one who cared for others. We have the other piece of that, and there's other parables and other points in the different gospels when different people ask Jesus, well, who is my neighbor? Jesus has taught, love your neighbor. This is what the Good Samaritan does. But they're pretty shrewd. Well, who's my neighbor? I mean, I don't have to worry about those people, do I? They're not really my neighbors. And in fact, I want to move somewhere where all my neighbors think like me and dress like me and look like me and we all agree with each other. That's not neighbor. Jesus is talking about the neighbor who is completely outside of that. And many of them who question Jesus about who is my neighbor, they're brokenhearted because we all admit some of our neighbors are hard to love. I am blessed to be in a neighborhood that has great neighbors. I mean, we just have a good time. There are people that drive by my house now, especially since I repainted it, and it's a rather vivid house now. And they will look and they will look out their window and they'll wave at me. And I'll think, well, I don't know who you are for sure, but you appear to be one of my neighbors, and I'll wave back because I appreciate the collegiality and the greeting. How are you doing? How are you? I don't know them. And there are neighbors of different ethnicities and different languages. My neighbors from Ukraine, I haven't had deep conversations with them about the war. And they're getting old. I'm worried about them. And I don't know how to help them. They get out and walk every day with their dog, so I'm encouraged there. But these are my neighbors. Who are yours? How are they? So what will we choose? I remember, I haven't seen them in years now, but there used to be t-shirts that said, look out for number one. And I've seen people with signs like that in there, looking out for number one, me. Take care of yourself first. It reminds me of, have any of you seen the Pirates of the Caribbean movies? Jack Sparrow is a pirate. And he and his first mate, what's his first mate's name? I don't remember, and none of you are helping me very much. But they look at each other, and they remember the pirate's code, take all ye can and give nothing back. That's a true pirate's motto, isn't it? So which will we choose? What should we be about, that idolatry of things, of money, of power, prestige, vanity, whatever it may be that calls us and wants to be the focus of our lives, and which will never give us life, but only sadness eventually. So which of these will we choose? Brueggemann, I mentioned him a second ago, the Reverend Doctor who died last month, he said, obedience to God is so often coached in dire words, but choosing life over death is an easy choice. Amen. That's an easy choice. This is an easy thing to do. So remember what these two Bible passages are telling us. Don't go after other gods. Don't allow those other things to occupy, preoccupy, or become more important. And do love your neighbor. Love your neighbor as God has loved us. As they are preparing to enter the promised land, Moses is not allowed, and then there's a whole theological discussion about why God does not let him enter. But they come to the promised land, and they're preparing to enter, and so it is really Joshua who is Moses' second in command, if you will, and he helps lead everyone in. And the book of Joshua, we hear some of his words and some of his teachings. And one of his verses is the one that I hold with my family. As for me and mine, we shall serve the Lord. Amen? Amen. Amen.